Welcome to ApplauseCast. ApplauseCast, in association with the San Jose Jazz Society, presents Stephen Mara and Bill Hedge in conversation with Marina Garza, Latin jazz performer, arranger, composer, and bandleader of Orquesta del Sol. Join them as they discuss Marina Garza's beginning in jazz, her process for composition and arranging, and technology's impact on the music composition process itself. The conversation begins as Stephen asks Marina about the challenges of leading a band during rehearsal, interpersonal skills, and tailoring a rehearsal technique to the individual strengths of each band member.
Hi, this is Steve Mara from ApplauseCast.
And I am Marina Garza with Orquesta del Sol.
And I'm Bill Hedge.
I'm amazed that you get to hear any song ever, you know, because what goes on in a rehearsal? It's hard. It's hard to learn a new song. There's lots of moving parts.
Yeah, well, there's not only that, but it's also you're dealing with a lot of different personalities you have to work with. So it's not only just getting the music down, it's dealing with the way certain people learn. Some people are really good at reading charts and reading music. And some people are not good at reading music, but yet they're good at having a really good feel of the song and learning the song by forms, like through the forms. Like there's a first section, there's an introduction, and they'll remember the forms and not necessarily the actual notes. Mainly you'll see like drummers, you'll see bass players that don't actually read notation, but they understand the music through form instead of through notation. It's just like a general, it's more of a general guide to something that goes way more specific.
Well, what we wanted you to talk about today is you told me, you know, you've had academic training as a composer. Mm-hmm. Tell us, what does a composer do?
From the very beginning, like if you we're talking about the roots of composition, start from what your medium is as a musician. There's some people that are guitar players, some people are piano players, some people are like myself. I started trumpet. I didn't start piano. I didn't start a chordal instrument. Composition is so much easier when you start with a chordal instrument than when you are using, like a sax or a trumpet.
Now tell us what you mean by chordal.
Chordal meaning you can play more than one note at one time. So you're playing chords, you're playing triads, you're playing. So you have a better reference point into hearing or feeling the bigger picture of what you write than with just a single instrument like the trumpet, where you only play one note at a time or you play one pitch at a time.
You know, why don't you tell us what's your academic background?
I've been playing trumpet since I was 11. Started in middle school and high school, and then I went to Baylor University for my bachelor's in music ed. I was there for 5 years. And then I gigged and went out and played a lot of gigs. And then after that, I came back and did my master's in jazz studies at the University of North Texas. Did another 2.5 years studying jazz.
And tell us 3 classes that you took at the graduate level in jazz.
Improvisation, jazz theory, and jazz piano. Yeah, so those really helped me connect with composition. I have to say all 3 classes had a big play in how I compose now. I actually got my master's in music education with a jazz studies emphasis. So my idea was to be in school for 2 reasons. One, to learn how to play better jazz and be a good jazz musician and learn how to compose well and start my own group. And the other reason why I was there is to have a music ed degree, so I can teach as well, if that's something I choose to do later on in my life, give back, you know, to kids, and you know, which I'm doing part time right now teaching, but that's the reason why I went to school for music. I don't think I would have gone as just a strict performance major or a strict compositional major. I wanted to, you know, if I was going to spend my time learning, I wanted to get dive into more than one aspect of music. So that way, when I do come out to the real world, I can plant my roots in music and make a living doing music instead of having to have a job where I don't really care about and don't like to do my music.
So you were versatile enough from your academic training that you could perform, you could compose.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what I'm doing now, actually. I would say about half of my income is teaching and the other half is gigging. So, I mean, I'm able to, you know, pay my mortgage and do what I have to do.
Right, eat. But,
and eat.
Drive a
right,
car.
And drive a car, you know, even with. So, I mean, in those regards, I'm doing two things that are sustaining me in as being functional in the music world and not having to, you know, take a job that is not related.
Mm-hmm. What does a composer do?
In respects to how I do things, initially, I would say, as someone who came from the trumpet background, how I compose is through the keyboard. And I think what has really helped me over the years, because I started composing by using like electronic sequencers, and you know, where I'm able to play like a bass line, play a drum track, play a piano line to make my music. I've always kind of had that kind of medium of writing, which is, I think, very important in aspects with me. Some people can do it with just the guitar, you know. They write, like, you know, my roommate is like that. She's a guitarist, singer, and she writes her songs with her guitar and she sings. But for me, I'm not much of a, I don't sing a whole lot. I do mainly instrumental arrangements, or arrangements for my band. So I start, my medium is actually with sequencing electronically. Like,
but the vision, I don't know if vision's the right word, the auditory vision for a piece that you're working on. I mean, are you out standing in line at Safeway and you hear something and then write it down? Or
Usually it's through other songs I listen to. When I listen to music, like if there's an artist that I really dig, I really like, if it's salsa music or if it's, you know, other styles of music, I will take a certain song if I hear it. And like, this is, you brought up a grocery store. I was walking in the grocery store and I heard this song, and I heard a certain chord change in the chorus. I'm like, that is a great, great chord change that's going on in that part. I'm going to use that. I'm going to take that. And I found the song and I listened to it, found out what the chords were on in a certain section, and then I used it on a song that I wrote. But I was inspired by a certain, you know, segment of a song that,
from Safeway,
you know, yeah,
from the grocery.
Exactly, exactly. I think a lot of compositions are done that way. It comes from inspiration. You have to have the inspiration, you know. And for me, the inspiration's been Latin music and salsa and cumbia and lots of different styles of music that have really just opened my ears and just made me very motivated to write in that style, you know.
So again, going back to the grocery store riff, you heard that, you went away. What did you do next? Did you sit down and when you got home? And
yeah, it was I believe it was a Creedence Clearwater Revival song, and it was just like two chords that
poor
happened.
John Fogerty.
Yeah, it was two chords that were happening in the chorus, and I'm like, that is such a hip progression, and I took the progression and I used it in a song that I wrote, and I'm trying to remember which song it was. Probably Do What I Do, that's on my CD, and on the chorus, I used those progressions in Latin music. So I just think that also as a composer and knowing chord progressions, most songs will have a progression to it that is pretty normal, pretty natural. Most music, usually you'll hear in four-bar phrases, four-measure phrases. It's very similar to poetry in a way. Poetry has a certain rhythm, mm-hmm. and has stanzas and has refrains.
To it.
Exactly. It really has, that's the structure of, I think, you know, composition. I mean, people can do whatever they want, obviously, but there are certain structural elements to writing.
So when you're composing, you compose, if there's whatever the number, five instruments that are going to be in this. How do you do all five of those? How do you create this thing that when you hear it sounds good?
Okay, I can give you an example. Like with my band, my instrumentation is drums, congas, piano, bass, trumpet, saxophone, and vocals. usually for the vocals, I will try to work exclusively with one of my singers to come up with some lyrics, and we'll work lyrics together in that department. But when it comes to the music itself, I first will have to think, what kind of feel do I want to start with? Do I want to do, because, you know, in Latin music, there's so many different styles and feels of music. Do I want to do a cumbia? Do I want to do a bomba? Do I want to do a salsa tune? Do I want to do something that's more like timba? You know, and once I figure out the style that I want to do it in, merengue is my next one on my list right now that I'm working on, and a bomba. That, once I have that, then I have already what the drums are going to do. Then I decide what I'm going to do for chords, for the verse and the chorus, the introduction. So I'll start that out. What am I going to do for an introduction? Am I going to put horns in there? Trumpet, sax, usually great introductions start with a good horn line, playing something, bam, right there in front, maybe 4-8-bar introduction. Then the music kind of gets a little softer at the point of the verse, so there's less going on in the verse section, which maybe just be bass and piano. And
what are you writing? I mean, you're talking right now kind of like from the 50,000-foot level, that you want horns here, you want the guitar to come in here, etc.
Right.
And that kind of a sequence. But are you composing that sequence as you're thinking about it and like you're describing it now? Or are you just kind of roughing it out?
Well, usually what happens when I'm composing is I will sit down and make a map, kind of a map, a blueprint of how am I gonna get from the beginning to the end, and what the form's gonna be of the music. I'll usually do that first. I'll have that set, and then it's kind of like painting a picture. You do, you know, kind of the general, and then you put the specifics into each section.
Go from the big down to
right.
The little.
Because salsa music is very, it's got a lot of sections to it. You know, it's not like most music, like most pop songs usually have maybe two sections, three sections, a bridge, and you're done. But with salsa, it's pretty involved. You've got an introduction, and usually sometimes the introduction will be the same as the ending. And what I've noticed in some salsa music, the most difficult parts of the songs have been the introductions and the ends, and they always catch musicians off because they're not ready for it, and usually it'll be rhythmically different. And then you'll have the verse, and you'll have a little bit of horn lines going on behind the verse as accompaniment. Then you'll have horn sections, you'll have solo sections, you'll have call and response, which we call in Spanish coro pregones, which is where the singers sing a line, like a chorus, and then the lead singer will improvise over that. So then you have a lot of that going on. Then sometimes you have drum breaks and gears that change. You have different, there's so many things that can happen.
But when you first have that map or working version of that map, you haven't, if I understand what you're saying correctly, you haven't heard the song, if you will, yet.
No.
You just know architecturally what you want it to look like. Is not the right word, but
how the story is going to be told.
Right. How the song's going to go.
Right. Right. Right.
So how do you then take that picture, that map, and convert that into, where's the audio? When's the first time you
that's
get to
when
hear
you,
what it
that's
sounds
when
like?
I go in and use certain programs on my computer. GarageBand has been really helpful in hearing that, you know, finishing the picture. Also, I'm working with a Logic Express, which is the next higher program from GarageBand. That's a little bit more intense and a little harder to deal with, so I'm kind of on that path trying to learn. Because the better thing, these two mediums that I've noticed that are really great is the fact that GarageBand is so user friendly. Pretty much anybody can go in there and write music or play. I shouldn't say write music, but make music. You know, you don't have to have a musical background to make music in GarageBand. I use Finale a lot to write my charts out. Mm-hmm. I just bought the new version of Finale, the 2006 version, and they do have a whole another section of that program, which I haven't really dived into yet, that is about, has to deal with sequencing and actually playing what you write, you know, notational. And then I use, right now I'm using GarageBand, and I'm getting into Logic Express to write. But the thing that's so great about Logic and is that you can, and GarageBand, is that you can also record. I did a recording of a rehearsal to make a demo for this Latin jazz group I'm working with, and the recording came out so nice, almost professional. It was live, But the horns, everything was crystal clear. Even the mixing of the instruments, because actually I have a Yamaha mixer, very much similar to what you have. It's exactly the same one, I bet. And I used the mixer to you know, kind of bring the piano and the bass in directly. But with one good microphone, I had a good quality demo.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you don't have. I won't have to go to a studio to make demos.
Okay, so you're in Safeway, wherever. You hear something, John Fogerty, you say, "Oh, I like that." You got that. You go home. You create a map, a picture of mm-hmm. what it is that the different parts. You then sit down with the software, different tools, and how will the piano sound? How will this sound? What comes next?
Well, once the song is done, once I've already decided where the what chord progressions I'm going to use in each section and how each section links and works, once all of that is laid out, it's on my GarageBand, let's say. From there, I write the score. I use Finale and do my instrument, write it all out, chart it all out for the band. And once it's charted out,
I would have thought you would have done from. I don't know, whatever I am, a novice, not even a novice, but sort of someone who's not a musician, that you would have written it out before you got to that stage.
No. It's hard to write without knowing what it sounds like for me. I have to hear it, know what it sounds like first before I can write it, before I'll write it down.
Now, have you known composers who write directly out of their heads?
No, I guess not.
That's a good song title, Bill.
I think a lot of people,
composers
even if...
directly out of their heads. I like that.
I think even piano players that, you know, they have to do their progression, I would think, first and then write what they did, you know.
Now, I've known some people with perfect pitch who write right out of their heads, but there aren't very many people like that.
I don't have perfect pitch.
Yeah.
Plus, it's a feel, too. I want to feel it, you know. It's like I want to touch it and feel it and, you know, get every idea that I could possibly do in one section and do it, you know.
So when you do the notation, if you will, it's essentially documenting the sound that you've already created.
Exactly.
Because that's the mechanism by which you're going to be able to communicate this to other musicians.
Right.
Here's the story. I mean,
yeah.
Read it.
Yeah, okay. It's the framework that you bring in a rehearsal. So I give them all the charts. Now we change things around.
No, and we've sat through your rehearsal.
Right.
We see how dynamic
exactly.
It is.
But we start with an already structural frame in rehearsing. We don't come in and go, oh, let's just do this, you know. And some bands do that. Some bands do great doing that kind of work. But you know, it just depends on the medium of people that you're working with. Like the people in my band. We get together maybe once or twice a month for rehearsals. So that's not a lot of time to do.
So you have to be efficient.
Yeah, we have to be efficient. We have to get the music, you know. And this is, to me, is the most efficient way. I put in most of the work. I put in, I'd say, 90% of the effort in writing and arranging the music for the group. And the other 10% goes to the personalities in the band. The other 10% goes to, if I write the lyrics, what the singer's going to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or if the singer writes the lyric, you know, then what's she going to do with it? And how is it going to work with what I've already done?
I mean, do you ever email or however the score, the notation to mm-hmm. to the musicians before you get together so they can take a look at it?
I can do that. I do that every now and then. Because my piano player, my bass player, and my conga player all have the same program. I have Finale. So we can pass music along via email.
Now, the first time you hear the band, your group, perform something that you wrote, how different is it from the way you envisioned it, from the notation that you created in the first place?
It can be very different at some points, depending on the style of the music. And what I do a lot of times, too, is once I've done it through GarageBand and once I've completed it, I'll make CDs and give it to everyone so they have a frame point of what I want, you know, what I'm going for in certain sections. And they'll either do it the way I have it recorded or we'll do something different. We'll change stuff around.
And one of the things, you know, when I'm not doing this part, I mean, I paint. And kind of like you, I'll see something visual someplace, and maybe I'll sketch it or just kind of remember it. And then when I actually try and create the painting, more often than not, it almost has nothing to do with what the first visual image was. I mean, I can see the connection to it, but it doesn't look at all like what I thought it was going to look like.
Exactly.
Is that the same thing that you're talking about?
That's a very good analogy. In fact, even more so because you're dealing with other minds that are shaping it in different ways too.
Whereas I control the universe because I'm the one who's doing
it. Yeah, exactly. Right. No one else is like going, oh, right. Well, you need to do this.
Right.
You didn't do that, so I think you should do that. And you're like, no, I don't want to do that. That's not what I envisioned it. But it would sound or look so much better if you did it this way, you know? Mm-hmm. So these are certain things that, you know, when you work with another person.
That's just human dynamics.
Yeah. You got to learn to push, pull, give and take as much as possible and walk out of a rehearsal and still like the person who may have butchered your tune, you know, right. in your head.
But sometimes so. I bet that's okay, that it comes out better, mm-hmm. whatever
sometimes,
better means.
Yeah,
and other times
I mean,
it's not.
I have to say, I am thankful to having a percussion section that are, you know, that are very versed in salsa and clave and stuff that I'm not so versed in because they, you know, they shape my music and put drum breaks in that I don't do, you know, that I don't know how to do, but they know how to do. You know, so everybody adds something.
Do you feel anxious the first time you present, if that's the right word, a piece that you've created to the band to see what kind of response they get?
Yeah, sometimes. Self-conscious is a good word sometimes. They're like, oh, I hope they like the song or hope they don't think it sucks. And
mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But luckily, the last two songs that I wrote came out pretty good. The cumbia is good. And, you know, I think it also helps that, you know, I've been using a singer who's got a wonderful voice, you know, and she's daring and she likes to write lyrics, and that helps too. It helps a lot.
So has technology changed dramatically the way composers compose?
I think so. I think it's kind of like a bridge. It's actually been a bridge for people who don't normally compose. It's actually bridged the gap between, you know, hardcore composers and, you know, weekend warrior composers, you know, if you want to say it that way. But I mean, seriously, it really has. I think there are obviously elements of composition and music that make a song a great song. And there's also, you know, I think there's ways of composing without knowing, like I was saying, without knowing how to play an instrument.
Just that it sounds good.
Right. Right, what you go by, what you hear.
You know, I was watching a DVD a couple of nights ago of the George Harrison Memorial Concert at Albert Hall with Ravi Shankar,
mm-hmm.
and it was interesting to watch because Ravi Shankar said most Indian musicians can't read music, and even if they could, it's not Western style music. And he said Indian music, the notes are in between the spaces where Western music is. And so there's this constant back and forth where he would do these sounds and the Western musicians would be like trying to transcribe what he was talking about into
right.
Western notation. You know, that kind of cultural, it was very dynamic. I mean, do you see that too with the kind of music that you're doing, that it's, since it's sort of Latin-based, is it different than...
Well, it's funny because I think the Latin music has a lot of correlation with classical music and with more structurally related music, form-wise and level of difficulty. Because if you listen to a piano player doing what they do, piano montunos and octaves and all of these things, it's very complex music. You know, it's very, that's why I think that a lot of Western European music kind of blended into Latin music historically, even in Mexico. If you hear like the songs from Mexico, they have a lot of classical influence in their music, the mariachi music, and, you know, there's polka in there too. And there's just a lot of articulation, a lot of articulate stuff that's going on that I think was really brought from the classical Western European.
So when you're driving to work or you're just listening to music, are you able to listen to it just as music, or are you looking at it kind of like an architect looking at a building and saying, geez, you know, they should have put that column over here?
Well, it depends on the style of the music and the era of the music, because, you know, I was an 80s child and I grew up, pretty much in the 80s. So like when I listen to 80s music, it's totally different because I think of it more as like a reminiscent music and
give me some
sing
example.
Along.
When you say the 80s, who are you listening to?
Let's see.
Point of reference?
I'm like mid 80s. I was in high school, so like bands that were more new wave, kind of like I think I'd mentioned like the Thompson Twins, mm-hmm. and I'm just like, even Devo, you know, and Rush. Mm-hmm. They're obviously AC/DC was popular too when I was in high school. Men at Work, you know, those bands were
right. Okay.
So anytime I hear them on the radio, it's I don't listen specifically like, oh, that singer's like so flat right there, you know. I think more reminiscent because, you know,
that's entertainment for you.
It's entertaining, entertaining. And I think I don't think I'm so critical when I listen to music. I think I'm more like, what can I get from it? What can I take from that song? What can I, you know, what can I be inspired about when I listen to certain songs? You know, but I don't think I'm extremely critical. You know, I think I'm pretty open-minded when I hear different songs.
So you can still listen to music just like I would listen to music. Can you dance to it? Is it fun? Does it work? Does it make me feel a certain way?
Right, right. I mean, I just, that's like when I hear music too. I mean, I don't think, I just think of what mood it's going to put me in and what it's going to make me think about.
When you write something, do you have that goal in mind with a piece? Or do you find the goal once you reach the end?
I think my goal overall with when writing is what it's going to, what how we are going to perform it on stage and how people are going to respond to it. Are people going to dance to it, or is it going to be like, oh, people can't dance to this song, they're going to be more listening? Is this a song I want people not to dance so much to and I want them to really listen to what we're saying? Or is this a song I really just want people to have a great time with, and the minute we kick it off, people are on the dance floor dancing? Or, you know.
So you want some practical reaction from them.
Right.
You don't want the audience to just sit there and go, oh, yeah. You don't want necessarily their reaction to it to be totally subjective. You want them to physically react to the music.
Right. For the most part with our music, we've been, you know, well, we're kind of like categorized as a dance band. That's kind of our job, but people hire us so they can dance. So, yeah, I mean, I try to stick with that kind of that medium. I mean, the structure, you know, just as long, okay, we got a groove, we're going to do this song, it's going to be a merengue. If that much I know, then the rest of it is up to me how I want to convey my feelings or my thoughts or my emotions.
Do you run into situations where you think the audience, when you were composing this, would have responded a certain way, and then when you actually play it, doesn't turn out that way?
Yeah, you know, okay, here's something, here's a good example. Depending on the type of gig we do, if it's a salsa club, people are there to dance salsa, sometimes it's not so good to put in a cumbia or a merengue. Well, no, actually, merengue works pretty much good with any type of when you're doing salsa. But certain styles and rhythms of music, people are not as inclined to dance to as they are inclined to dance to, you know, like with salsa music, because they're all different feels and they're all different types of dances and they're all different styles of where you put your foot and how you put your foot, like with the cha-cha and, you know, and so some people aren't that versed in cumbia. I mean, and some people are more versed in the Cuban music, and some people are more versed in Puerto Rican and, you know, different types. But the thing is, it's like, depending on the audience, if you have like a big audience that's just either Mexican or, you know, Cuban, they're coming from totally two different places and two different fields of music, and what they feel comfortable dancing to or getting up on the dance floor for. Like, we played a show. It was a convention conference. Mm-hmm. And the last gig we did before that, we played the cumbia and nobody got up and danced. And we're like, okay, let's just give it a shot. Why not? Let's just play the cumbia anyway. So we played the cumbia and every single person in that room got up and danced. Because it was their background. It was from their,
their culture.
Yeah.
So are you more sensitive to the cultural background of your audience when you do a performance?
Yeah, I think that's very important. However, if we do like a festival, like we're going to be playing North Beach Festival, most people will get up and dance to anything. They're not such snobs about it. They'll
that's
just
what, that's
get
what
up
I
and
would
dance
guess. They're
to
just
going to
get up and dance.
And if they can feel a beat, they're up there. And then, you know, it's funny. It's just, you know, some people are real like snobs. You know, dancing snobs, you know, but so to speak.
Do you have like three test tunes to see what the audience is like? Or do you have them fill out surveys as they walk in the door?
No, we don't do that. But I mean, I guess when we do a gig, we pretty much know ahead of time what kind of gig it is. Like if we play a salsa club, we know people really want traditional salsa. That's what they're there. They're there for, to learn or to dance their salsa music. And so we try not to get too far away from that, else they'll leave. You know, they'll go to the other salsa club down the street or something. So it's you know.
Do you think fundamentally people like to dance?
I think so. I think there's so many different mediums of going to dance, and it's such a social thing. I mean, people dance for totally different reasons. Most people, like, people dance to meet other people and hook up, or people dance because it's a great workout. Yeah. You know.
How often do you compose?
I try to sit with like one song for about a month. I take about a month to work one song out.
Are you working on multiple songs?
Sometimes I'll do maybe two or three at you know, at one time with one, you know, setup. But depending on my schedule and when we're rehearsing, kind of I gear my songs to our next rehearsal kind of setup.
One of the things that I find, be it if I'm writing something or painting, is having the discipline to know when something is done.
Right.
To stop dorking around with it, just saying, that's it, no more. Do you find the same thing when you're composing? How do you know when it's done?
You know what? I get stuck on certain sections. You know, that's what, you know, I'll work on it one day, like, and I'll sit there for maybe a couple of hours and work on one section and get the horns together and get it all set up. And then I'll come back to it the next day and go, wait a minute, this sounds so much better. And I'll go back and change it, you know. Yeah, but I think that's the only real way that you can, you know, really.
But at some point, you have to say.
Yeah, at some point, you have to say, yeah, that's it.
It's done.
Yeah,
well, part of it for me is that I just don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah,
I want to go do something else.
I want to get out.
So what does your cutting room floor look like? I'm sure you come up with ideas that aren't appropriate for this song, but they might be an inspiration for something else. So
I keep every, it's all in my computer, but I keep pretty much everything that I do. And even if, like, I might have come up with a line that doesn't work, but I do save a lot of stuff. I definitely do.
You ever go back and use that as inspiration for the next one or the third one?
Sometimes, but you know, sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just sits there.
Yeah.
Forever.
Writers do that. They like take out paragraphs or sentences, but they would like the sound of it. It was inappropriate for the story or the line, and then they save it somewhere, go back to it later.
Right. I think I can. I do that with my horn lines. Mm-hmm. Horn lines can, you know, it's a little bit easier to do that with them than with lyrics. Lyrics a little bit harder.
So you try to compose a little bit all the time.
I try. It's, you know, it's so hard sometimes with the schedule and lots of gigs. I'm playing, you know, almost every weekend I'm playing gigs, and then I've got teaching, and then I'm got this new job at Pandora. So it's, yeah, I'm like spread a lot. I'm fairly spread pretty thin right now, but I try to get stuff done on the weekends when I have the time.
What's your favorite part of composing?
I think the freedom to do whatever I want.
Until you bring it to the band.
Right. That freedom of doing whatever.
And then democracy sets in.
So right. But I think initially the freedom of being inspired by whatever factor is out there that inspires me. And just to start somewhere and feel free about doing that. It's like, I think it's good therapy too. It's in a way, it's like kind of being one with yourself and not letting all of that distraction behind you and all that self-conscious emotions get in your way. Like, should I do it this way? Or is somebody watching me? Is somebody going to care? It's like, you know, the initial part of writing is the freedom of not caring.
When you hear something that you composed, and 6 months, 7 months have gone by, can you still get back into that place where you were when you created it? Or sometimes listening to it, is it like someone else?
It's totally different. It feels different. Right. I think the intensity of what you're writing about at that point it's always so intense then, and then it turns into different things as you perform it. Months and months and then years later becomes different every time. And also if you have different people performing it too, it becomes something different as well. Like if I have someone else playing piano on a gig, it becomes something different. Or if I have another singer singing something, you know.
Is it structurally different or just emotionally?
It's emotionally different? Yeah. It's not structurally. It's more emotional.
They're singing the same
thing, but it's more of an emotional thing. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, mentally when you sing a song, I think each time that you sing, or each time that I sing, perform a song of mine, I'm coming from, I may be coming from the same place, but not always. I mean, I feel as it's kind of really getting kind of confused here with the way I'm speaking. But anyway, it's more like.
It's okay. Our listeners are confused. It's
yeah,
okay.
Well, just helping the confusion.
It's okay.
It's just, there's so many different attributes environmentally that, you know, obviously change your whole emotional feel at the point you're singing it. You may not be thinking of exactly what you thought of a month ago when you sang it. You may be thinking of other things.
Yeah. It's a reflection of where you are in your own life, too.
Right.
I mean, are there ever times that you're driving to a gig or doing composing that you think, like, you know, I just don't feel like doing this today?
Yeah. Especially when I'm the one having to run sound for the band and do everything before the gig and then have to tear everything up after the gig. Yeah. Those are the... Because I'm like... It's an intense gig since you walk in the door. You have to make sure everything's working, the sound's working. You have to make sure everybody gets there on time. You have to make sure everybody has their music ready. You have to, you know, and then when you're on to play and you're already exhausted.
Right.
You know, so yeah. I mean, I guess those are times that I would feel like, oh, I wish I could just stay home and.
But you do it.
Right.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But yeah, it's like a vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm. Does it come together once you start playing?
For the most part, yeah. Depends on the attitudes of everyone, too. I mean, it's you got maybe two or three people with, you know, that are grumpy and grouchy and don't want to be there and are upset about something else. It really does rub off on everyone.
No, sure, it changes the volume.
Especially if it's the rhythm section and you have a drummer who's mad and he counts everything off faster than normal and, you know. And he's not really aware of doing it, and he's doing it, you know, kind of thing. And you have to remind him two or three times to watch the tempo on certain songs. Yeah, then it becomes, you know.
Sort of the opposite reaction. Are you ever surprised by something that you wrote, pleasantly surprised? In other words, you remember this piece from like 4 or 5 years ago. Do you listen to it and go, wow. That's really cool. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I wrote that?
One of my first CDs I did when I was in grad school. And, all the players that I work with back then, and I listened to my solos on my trumpet back then, and I'm like, well, that was pretty good. I did a good job on that, you know? Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I surprise myself. Yeah. All those, you know, classes and all the practicing and I really did, you know? I can hear it in that one solo, you know.
What are the characteristics you listen to when you're listening to a piece of music?
Depending on the type of song. I mean, if it's like on the radio, I think the first thing I connect with, and like most people connect with, are the singer, what the singer's singing, the timbre, the voice, if it's like really high or if it's really low, and what they're singing about. I think that's always like the first thing. That gets your attention on a vocal tune, and then the rest is, I would say the second thing would be the feel of the song, what it feels like, you know, what I'm, how it affects my emotions, you know, rhythmically. If it's like if it's got a nice groove to it, or if it's just kind of like not really doing much.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just more of a chordal slow, yeah. But I think initially it's the timbre of someone's voice. And what they're saying is what catches me the most. But when it comes to salsa music and Latin music, it's definitely the feel, the rhythmic feel that I listen to first. I think the voice takes a back seat with the Latin music.
What do you listen to when you're driving to work? What's on the radio?
Well, actually, I listen to Air America Radio, so it's far from music. But when I do listen to music, I listen to, I like funk. I listen to Eddie Harris. I listen to jazz. I like anything groove oriented. I mean, that's what really attracts me. That's why I like salsa, because it's got such a nice feel and groove in my head. And I just really love that kind of stuff.
What gigs are coming up for you?
The website URL is odslive.com. Log on to shows, and then our list of shows are there.
If you'd like to leave us email regarding tonight's podcast, drop us a line at ontheair@applausecast.com. If you'd like to have ApplauseCast produce a podcast for you or your organization, email us at sales@applausecast.com or call us at 650-400-3929. This has been an ApplauseCast production. Thanks for listening.